I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm on an iPad because I've given up on, I don't know what's going on, but I kept getting you guys in slow motion and I wanted to talk to you.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Story Studio. So, my name is Luke. You may recognize my voice because you've listened to the show before. Or if you don't, my name is Luke. Okay, so I'm going to have to have a bit of a disclaimer on this episode. It was one of those episodes where we were recording and things just weren't going right. So here's what you can expect during this episode. You can expect the disappearance, reappearance, and second disappearance of Mr. Daniel Wilcox. You can expect weird background noises, which I can only assume were the haunting sounds of ghosts eating packets of crisps. Some non-specific chit-chat about stuff that isn't really about publishing at all, but is or could be considered waffle. And the odd piece of interesting bit of writing and publishing advice we've learned during 2016 at Hawk and Cleaver. So I just want to quickly say thank you so much for listening to us this year, if you have. If you haven't, I don't know how you're getting this message right now. But if you have, we just want to say thank you. We're going to continue to make stuff, going to continue to make the show into 2017. We're going to be doing loads of cool stuff like comic books and sideways podcast stuff and more books and more of the good stuff, really. So I'd love to hear how your year went, so please do get in touch over at hawkandcleaver.com or just drop us a line on Twitter and we'd love to hear that. But for now, on with the show.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Daniel Wilcox, and today I'm joined by
Santa Claus and Luke Condor with a K,
and his elf Ben Errington with a B.
It's good that you could admit that you're an elf.
It's Santa Claus and his elf.
So today we are doing a bit of a roundup episode. We're going to be talking about the stuff we've done, stuff that we've learned. I've got a list. Ben's got a couple of things. Dan's got tons and tons of notes, I believe. But first, for all that, we're going to get straight into it and we're going to do the big whoops for the week. So, Ben, do you want to go first?
I'll go first. Let's talk about a whoop, a big
this
one.
This is so much more professional this time around.
Oh, yeah. A whoop of the big variety.
Yes, please.
I'm going to go for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, which I believe is the official title. Although I've seen a lot of people referring it to as Rouge One when they're writing their reviews online.
Silly.
That's a prequel to Moulin Rouge.
Rouge One.
It is. Rouge One. There we go. Yes, I saw Rogue One last Thursday, I believe.
No, I've heard mainly positive, but I have heard a bit of mixed.
Yeah. I'm going to say it was good. I loved it, but it was nowhere near as good as The Force Awakens. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's so much better than The Force Awakens. It blew The Force Awakens out the water. I'm going to say no, absolutely not. Force Awakens was pretty stupendous, I think.
No,
quite an achievement.
I don't know how I feel about Gareth Edwards as a director. Because I always feel like, apart from Monsters, like I really want to get into like Godzilla and stuff, but it just never seems to look like, never seems to be a particularly well put together story. Yeah, never seems to draw me in.
I think a lot of I do quite like his directing style, but I think it's a difficult one to judge. But based on we've only got monsters and Godzilla to go by, that's the only features he's done, isn't it? Because obviously, it's hard to say with such a big film as Star Wars. It's obviously going to be it's going to have so much input from so many different people. Yeah. It's hard for that film to be owned by him. Do you know what I mean? As his sort of thing. I mean, I'm sure there's the studio are going to be. I mean, it's Disney for God's sake.
Yeah.
They're going to be involved massively through the process. But it was good. But I think a lot of people maybe are thinking there's a lot of nostalgia involved in it, and it is quite a action packed, action driven Star Wars film without too much of the Force in it. Yeah. I mean, there's the Force in it, but there's not too much. And I think a lot of people are comparing it to like it could be like a war film, which I guess I can kind of agree with.
Yeah.
But we got quite a lot of good characters now. But I wouldn't say there was like a really good standout character, a standout lead as such.
What about the robot?
The robot.
Angry droid. I've heard good things.
He's pretty good, but he's no BB-8, is he?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's be honest. No, it was good. It's Turdyke, is that his name? The dude from Firefly?
Yeah, Alan.
Yeah, he did Tudyk, the motion. Yeah. Alan Tudyk, yeah. He did the motion capture and the voice. But it's good. It's a good romp. And I think if you enjoy certain characters from the original trilogy, not going to say who, you might have seen the trailer, I don't know, then you're going to walk away happy.
I definitely want to watch it. I think, I don't know, like I said, I really want to watch it just because of Star Wars, and Star Wars is like always been one of my favourite things. But I'm a little bit nervous about not liking it. Like when I went to watch Force Awakens, I just had a feeling it was going to be good, but I'm nervous. I'm going to go to see Rogue One, and it's just going to be a little bit of a letdown.
I know what you mean, but I think just don't expect. Well, I guess expect a lot. It's good. You'll enjoy it. There's no way you won't enjoy it because it's a good action film. Sort of like the motives of like all the main characters are good. It's quite believable. It's emotional. The score was a bit weird. I know it's not John Williams. It's the first Star Wars not John Williams.
Do you think, because I would have thought with the Marvel films, so Disney also owned Marvel, and Marvel films all have a very similar score.
And they
all have a very...
too memorable.
Yeah, exactly. They all feel a certain way. Do you think that Rogue One doesn't quite have that? It doesn't quite.
Yeah, maybe. But I think what it's trying to do is it's trying to separate itself. It's trying to go, look, this is a standalone. It's not one of the main episodes. It's a standalone film, which I kind of get, but it's so connected to that story. It's hard to be a standalone film. It keeps getting. I always see a standalone film as being a completely self-contained story that doesn't affect any other film in the universe, but it does. It's a direct prequel to the first Star Wars. Yeah. Well, it is, because it happens just before or at the same time as, or just before, episode 4. So it's hard to call it a standalone film.
Yeah. I'm quite excited though, because I mean, I used to read all the Expanded Universe books growing up. And
I never really did that.
It's quite nice that they're going to have these standalone films that might be able to... Like, I'd like to see, like, just a standalone Boba Fett film. Like, I'd like to see all these, like, little stories that don't have to feel like they're part of something bigger.
Well, going back to the score, it just felt like there were certain recognisable themes from Star Wars, and then it would sort of just go somewhere else. And it kind of, like, took away the like, sort of magic and the awe of it.
Yeah.
For a second, when it was just like, oh god, yeah, that's the start of the Imperial March, and then you're like, oh wait, it's not, it's something else. It kind of like takes away from it a little bit, almost like it was trying to be too far removed.
Yeah, I have one more question about it. Did they have the opening scroll, the text scroll?
No,
they didn't.
No,
that's insane.
It's, you know what? I obviously don't want to spoil anything, but when the title comes up and the music that accompanies it. It just feels so wrong. It kind of just goes, much higher. It's like, it's exactly like that.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like, whoa, what's going on here? But Mads Mikkelsen was really good. Really enjoyed him.
He's always good, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's always good. Stupendous. Ben Mendelsohn, who played like...
he's always good as well.
Orson Krennic, I think his name was.
Yeah.
He was good. He was good as like a little slime ball.
Plays that role a lot as well.
Yeah. He was good. He reminded me of the character he played in Lost River. I don't know if you've seen that, the Ryan Gosling directed.
No, I've not seen it.
Just a bit of a slime ball. Someone you know who's got bad intentions.
That other Ben Mendelsohn thing, the TV show, it's on Netflix. And it's like, it takes place on a beach or something. He's like a brother, but he's like a. It's got a shady past. That's a really good Ben Mendelsohn performance, anyway.
I don't know if I've seen that. Have you seen Animal Kingdom?
No.
With Josh Edgerton?
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's good.
It's an Australian sort of like crime drama.
Yeah.
That's really good. You should definitely check that out. But yeah, Rogue One, definitely worth a watch. I think new Star Wars fans are going to love it. The old Star Wars fans might be a little bit more unsure, but then the bits that connect to episode 4, I think people enjoy.
Yeah.
Cool. There's some kick-ass stuff in there. Oh, yeah, and Donnie Yen as well plays like a blind dude who's not like Force. He believes in the Force, but he's not Force capable.
Hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So he's pretty cool. He's blind. He's got a stick and he does a lot of ass kicking stuff. To be fair, like the lead, Felicity Jones, who plays Jyn Erso, I was just a bit like, could have been anybody. Do you know what I mean? Everyone surrounding her was kind of like a lot more interesting. Her character, every time she was kind of like talking, I was a bit like, I don't know if she's as interesting as perhaps they think she is.
Yeah.
That's because you're a misogynist.
Exactly. It's holding me back from everything. But I think there's some stuff in the trailers, some of the stuff she says, which sounds quite cool, but you don't hear. It's not in the cut of the film.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Do you remember? There's a part where she says, "This is a rebellion, isn't it?" Well, I rebel. I was waiting for that line, and it didn't happen.
There's loads of cool things that went in the film I saw. The whole post, like 140 shots or something that went in the end in the final film, but it's fair enough. Don't put it in the trailer.
How'd you feel about that? Because we've had loads of that this year. We've had loads of stuff with Suicide Squad, stuff with Batman versus Superman, where you see something or hear something in a trailer. How often do you do this as well? You hear a line in a trailer and you memorize it and you wait for it. And when it's delivered, it's different.
Yeah. And it throws you off when it's different. It's when they've used a different take or something. Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. It's quite disconcerting when it happens. But I think maybe it's like a new way of filmmaking where they do the edit for the film at the same time as they do the edit for the trailer, but in like two separate vans, edit vans, wherever they do them.
I would rather just see exact lines and cuts from the film, but they just show a lot less. Like in the Batman versus Superman trailer, one of the later ones, you saw that Batman and Superman were teaming up against Doomsday.
And then you saw Wonder Woman, and it was like, that's the film. I know exactly what's going to happen now.
Yeah, because just that small scene of Batman and Superman looking at each other saying, "Is she with you?" Like, you knew that they were teaming up against something else. So it's like the whole film's called Batman versus Superman, and you're already saying that they're not going to be versus each other for the whole film. So you've already given the whole shit show away.
Yeah. So,
goddamn!
My big whip is I finished Rick and Morty the other day. Have you seen Rick and Morty?
No, I've only ever seen just like tiny little snippets. I don't really know. To be fair, I don't really know that much about it. So enlighten me.
It's pretty amazing. Like, I think, like, on a surface level, you'd probably look at it and you'd think, it's probably got a robot chicken-y sort of thing going on, but more like Family Guy sort of thing. But it's not. It's really like bizarre and mental in many ways. But so it's made by Dan Harmon and another guy called Justin Roiland. Dan Harmon, I believe, is the best TV comedy producer type person at the minute, because I've seen like so many good things like Community. I absolutely love Community. Are you a Community fan?
No, unfortunately.
You're not? Okay,
I've not seen that either.
Yeah. And then he made Harmon Quest, which is like where he played Dungeons and Dragons with some comedians live on stage.
And
then you get the animator to animate over the top, which was pretty amazing as well. And then this, and it's like, so you've got the dynamic of Doc Brown and Marty, but
yep.
Doc Brown is basically his drunk, insanely clever granddad who lives in the lives in the house with them. You've got Morty, who's slightly like retarded sort of kid. I'm going to say retarded just because they even talk about that in the show, is like whether they can say that or not. But the only reason he has Morty around is because his brain is so intelligent. There's people all over the galaxy who are trying to get him to make them weapons or whatever. And he has to have someone who has the exact opposite brain waves to like camouflage his brain power. It's such a bizarre series, but it's something special.
I'll have to check out. It's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all on Netflix now, yeah. And it's got a bit of Nine Inch Nails in there, which I know you like.
Oh, man.
I'm not going to have time. I'll get halfway. I'll go for it anyway. My big whoop is my only contribution so far. I feel awful. My big whoop is we finished draft 2 of Project Dan. So 2 books, Lazarus and They Rot, which I think we're going for a title now. And we have got some potential cover art together this week that I think looks awesome. That makes it look all shiny, makes it feel like it's actually becoming a real book and it's all coming together. It's going to be lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. We did have a cover, but it wasn't quite in keeping with like
the genre.
And also the art we used like kept appearing like everywhere. And I think like a club night in Dan's home in Lincoln. Is that right?
Yeah, there was like a Halloween Sugar club cubes. Night. That's a Halloween club night, and they had the zombies that we had used, a kind of different filters and different look, but yeah, it was the same image.
As soon as you see your potential book cover on like a nightclub window, it's probably time to change book cover.
Yeah, yeah, but the new one looks fantastic so far. Still need some tweaking, the text finalized and everything, but I think Ben, you have contributed fantastically to the cover. Ben has helped us out a lot.
Only a little bit. I think Luke put most of that one together, didn't he?
No. I'll take the credit for it, sure.
All right.
That was all Dan.
It was...
Oh, I'll tell you what,
because, yeah, well, this will be handy advice, I guess, for people looking for a budget way to do book covers. But I basically went on a website, and as part of signing up to their mailing list, you get a $30 credit for like a book cover PSD store. And they've only got like, it's quite limited. You can only pick from about 12 different covers. But I basically signed up, used that $30 to get the PSD, which is a Photoshop file that you can completely editable, and then did a few tweaks to make it a bit more in keeping with what we were wanting to go for. And then kind of handed it off to you to do your thing.
Yeah.
I like it. It looks good. It looks like a book I'd like to read.
Yeah. And I mocked up as well. I don't think you've seen them, Ben. I've mocked up just because when I got it together, I showed Luke. I basically just changed the color palettes a little bit, changed the title, put different images on, and just made it look like it would look in a series.
Okay.
Just to kind of go like, would this work? Because I think that was the other thing with the first design, and something that it's good to keep an eye on, because it was the first book in a series. I did think with the old design, what would be the next book cover?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Because you kind of want them to follow on from each other, but you haven't got the same image if you've just picked, like, I don't know, you could have varied bits and bobs, different filters and stuff. But yeah, happy, just very, very excited of how it looks. It makes it feel like the work is worth it now.
Yeah, it's getting there, isn't it? We're nearly there. So I think the next step for that is we're going to read through, get to draft 3, and at that point, I guess, send it to an editor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very exciting.
So I've got like a little bit of a list here of stuff that I think I found out or figured out or we figured out throughout the year. Do you want me to go first? Maybe just pick a point.
Yeah, man. Go for it.
Riff on it, and then we'll move on to the next one. So the first thing I wrote down, it feels like there's... So I've written 5 books now. And I've kind of realized that there's like a season, there's like a cyclical feel or like a rhythm to writing a book. So like when you start off, it's kind of massive and sort of difficult because you don't know where things are going to go. And then you keep writing, and halfway through you start to think your work sucks and you don't want to do it anymore. And then like you start to feel a bit better once you get towards the end and you're happy that it's done. And then it's difficult to get back to do the next edit. It feels like there's like a certain rhythm to it all.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. There's definitely phases. For me, it feels more like a wave. I'm riding the wave. I'm going all the way up to the top. I know at some point, I don't think about it too much, but I'm going to have to come back down. And I won't be riding the wave anymore. I'll just be treading water. I know what you mean. I find that. I think this year, well, probably the latter half of this year, I find it a lot harder. I don't really know why. I can't really pinpoint it. But in terms of getting momentum going, and that's why, like when you say like you've written 5 books and that, for me at the moment, that feels like Jesus Christ. When am I gonna do it? But to be honest, go on.
I was gonna say, I mean, 2 of those books were like co-written. So I mean, You only really take 1 book out of those, I guess. But I feel like it's like seasons to the year as well. Like it's almost like a farming season. Like you have like the bit where you're doing all the planting of the seeds and getting the ideas down and stuff. That's probably when you're more excited about what's my crop going to be like at the end?
Use analogies that everyone knows.
And then you do the actual like toiling work where, they toil the fields, whatever they do. And then it's like, this is bloody hard work. And then you start to feel like a bit shitty about it all. Like, I've done that field wrong.
I have to go back and do the first draft of that field.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know what I'm saying anymore, but I'm just saying that there's ups and downs. And like, I kind of feel like you just have to, when you're in a more difficult part, if it's in the writing of a book or if it's in like the year in general, you just know that it will pass and you will get past it.
Would you say life is a roller coaster, just got to ride it?
No. I'd say it's like a farmer's field. And you have to toil it.
Yeah. But that's good though. Do you feel like this year you've learnt a lot about writing, considering it's been the first year that you've published a novel?
Yeah. I think I've learned a lot more from the books that I've written and published than from the books that I have written but not yet published. I feel like there's a big learning process in that editing and getting something to press that if you don't publish it, but you just don't experience that, you don't understand what that is.
Yeah, I think this year I've done a lot of writing of different types of projects. So I'm working on some scripts, been doing some comic book stuff, and then obviously short stories, and I haven't actually published a novel this year.
Yeah, I can contest to that as well. The whole because I've is it frozen again?
No, I didn't know you were there.
That was creepy, wasn't it? That was like, yeah.
No, I, because this year for me, I've written, including the 2 that we're working on at the minute, I've technically written 4 novels. But 2 of those are first draft. They're kind of around 50 to 60,000 words. But I'm at the point where I feel like I needed to get them out of my system and just to have those initial first drafts of those books to, one, prove that I can write a novel, and 2, just to kind of go through that first draft, that slugging away, that getting into the process of it. And when it actually came around to working on Lazarus and They Rot, even now I'm still, you know, we're in the 3rd draft of these books. I'm trying to be as aware and open to what might be needed to kind of push forward, because this is my first experience of the 2nd edit, of the 3rd edit, before it goes to actual publication. I mean, I went through, I think it was about 17 overlooks of Sins of Smoke before that went out, but they weren't really edits. They were just, okay, I'll make that a bit cleaner. Okay, I'll make that a little bit cleaner.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a big, I think I learned a lot from those first 2 novels that probably won't get published. And I have no problem with that. I'm glad I put in that work, but I'm kind of also speaking as much as I can now before the signal cuts out.
Yeah.
But I think I'm learning a lot more about that latter half of the process now that we're actually pushing it and getting it to a point where it's going to be ready to go to print.
Yeah, I think you know, you do those ones where you're doing like 17 drafts or whatever. I think you're in like in the land of diminishing returns, and I don't feel like you actually are improving the book that much at that point. I mean, sure, you'll get to the point where it's like perfectly neat and there will be little to no typos, but in terms of the quality of the book and what the reader will experience, I think you kind of get to the point where it's like overdone, and like you could have got a lot more out of just moving on to the next book.
Yeah. Absolutely. I feel that the more books I have read this year, I mean, I've made an effort to read a lot more indie fiction to see what other people are doing, to see what sort of quality stands for a decent book in the indie market. And I think that looking back at it now, you're right. Like, I would have been able just to do 3, maybe 4 drafts of Sins of Smoke and put it out there and kind of moved on. But especially that, because that was my first book, that was a very precious, that part where you're like, I'm going to put this out there now. It's going to be terrifying. And you're kind of exposing yourself to the world. But now I think I'm at a point where enough people know, or enough people that I care about know what I do, and I'm more focused on like the end goal anyway. Yeah. So as much as like I want these books to be as fantastic as they can, it's, you know, I'm focusing on moving on to the next one and kind of getting the process rolling along.
Yeah, definitely. Also, I feel like if you don't move on, if you don't just like move on to the next one, you can like very quickly like lose your momentum in everything, and just kind of get stuck. Because I remember when I finished the third hipster book and I wasn't too happy with the draft, I didn't move on quick enough, if you know what I mean. I just kind of like got stuck, and it took me a while to sort of get over that and move on to like Project Dan, like to start writing properly again. I feel like I probably should have just done that straight away. I would have been so much better if I just sort of jettisoned my feelings to that previous book and moved on to the next one.
Yeah. But you get attachments, don't you, to projects, and
yeah,
you kind of want to keep slugging away. But yeah, there comes a point where you have to decide. I think if I've learned anything from this year, it's kind of looking to invest time where it's best spent.
Yeah, me too, I think.
Yeah, because I was going to look at another draft of A Clockwork Rose and look at putting that out. But in terms of long-term goals for me as a writer, I want to produce more sort of horror, more the stuff that we're kind of writing now, the post-apocalyptic fiction and things, than Clockwork Rose was essentially a thriller. And I don't think that I want to be focusing on thrillers. But then at the same time, especially in this last, well, these last few weeks, realizing how I want to start putting more time into the other stories and making more of that. All of us are really like wanting to next year push the other stories, make it bigger, and thinking maybe that's where some of our time should be kind of put towards instead of other things that might not reap as many rewards.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I do feel like the other stories can be a bit of an afterthought when you're working on these bigger projects.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah. I think so. When we did the, we did like a 7-day challenge, but we're all going to try and write 5 episodes each. And we like, all of us failed pretty spectacularly, I think, in one way or another.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm glad I did that just because it got most of my stories, at least the ideas, formed. So I was okay, so I could just sort of put it as an afterthought. But then I started to not really think about how the show was doing in over, like in general, because I wasn't editing the shows anymore. Carl was doing that. I was just sort of...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I wasn't even... I was just uploading the episodes. That's like all I was doing. So I definitely feel like I want this next year, I definitely want to at least set aside a bit of time every day to sort of focus on what we can do right now to make, to grow the episode. Because that's our biggest thing that we do. Not financially, but in terms of like audience numbers. So it's definitely worth putting some eggs in that basket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been the same. Because essentially what we have to do for the other stories is between all of us, we're writing one story each per month. Mm. And writing a 2,000-word story, I think, obviously isn't as, I guess not as, it depends how you look at it, but it's not as taxing as working on a novel and grinding away and doing that, because it's a bit of a smaller work. But even with the stories, like the novels, anything we're doing at the minute, I'm putting a lot of planning into it. But the other stories, I'll kind of go, this is a topic. And in a way, I kind of use it as a bit of a therapy, because I just spurt out whatever comes to mind for that particular story. And it seems to work right now. But it would be good to sit down, look at future themes, what I'll do for them, and actually get ideas in my head before I write and see if it improves any of the quality.
I think one thing I've realised that, like... although some months will be difficult in terms of like getting a story out there, you will always do it. Like you will always find something to put together in the end. Like, and some of the ones where I've like felt like I was struggling at the time are probably one of my favorite episodes that I've done now. So I feel like, what's that saying? Like creativity is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration.
Perspiration.
I feel like that's true.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that I've learned this year is the whole sitting down, just putting your butt in the chair on a certain time of day and just writing and just getting whatever out and just putting in the hours, I guess.
Yeah. I think with the other stories, I've learned to write outside of my comfort zone more so than ever before, because some of the themes that get chosen, like, it's never something that I would ever sort of sit down and write a story about. And it's like, sometimes you write like so completely out of your style. Like, because I always find that I write in quite within a box of my style all the time, no matter what kind of thing I'm working on. But with the other stories, I feel like I really do have to take a step back sometimes and really think about what I'm going to do, because sometimes my style won't necessarily work for that particular theme.
Have you surprised yourself by like enjoying a certain genre of story that you never really expected to write or to enjoy writing?
Yeah, I think so. I think, to be honest, I think I've enjoyed most of the themes in the end. There's a couple of stories that, looking back on, maybe I'm not 100% happy with, but
it's gonna most happen. Of them. I've got a couple of stories when I think I could have done better on, but it didn't happen.
I kind of agree. Like, there's some of the stuff like time travel, like that's not really anything. Time travel scares me a bit. When I watch it in films, you know, and TV shows, I'm a bit like, Jesus Christ. As soon as I start actually thinking about it, it freaks me out and I get a little bit confused, easily confused by time travel. So writing a time travel story, when I tried to do like a bit of a time loop thing, was a little bit daunting. And it took, I think, I definitely overthink it a little bit too much with the other stories. Do you overthink it too much, or do you fly straight in a lot of the time?
I actually think some of the better episodes are when I have like let it simmer and I have thought about it a bit. But like a few of them were literally just, I just sat down and started writing.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
Yeah, and then like the latest one that's come out, the Super Baby one, that was like 3,500 words on the first draft. So like,
what did you cut it down to?
2,200 or something.
See, that's quite a lot to lose, isn't it?
Yeah. But I feel like it kind of works. I mean, it might not be the best episode I've done, but I'm happy with it. So that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah, it's good to ask. Well, if you're happy with it, then.
Yeah. I guess another thing I've sort of realised is, we should talk about comics. I've kind of realised that I was thinking that comics are just more difficult to get projects moving in than books.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's true. I think what it is every new medium you get into has to have like a bit of a run-up before you actually get anything off the ground and moving. Because when I first started making films, it took me 2 years or something before I was able to get anything made of quality. And the same with like books. Like I wrote some short stories for the first 2 years, but it took me like 2 years to get to the first novel. And the comics, we started making comics, trying to make comics at the start of this year, and like nothing happened. We had like a couple of roadblocks, and then just nothing. And then with like El Marvo, it's taken a lot longer than I would have thought it would have taken. And when did you even start this idea? I can't even remember.
I think we started discussing it quite early in the year, maybe like March or April. That was the first time we started discussing it. But yeah, the process has been a little while, but I think that was because we took a bit of time putting the cover together.
Yeah.
It took a long time really, really working out some of these details. Like, I think that we went back and forth a lot of the times with what we wanted to do in the first arc of the story and what we wanted to add, and writing the script and just writing the treatment. Even that, we've gone back and forth a lot. I think a lot of it, even before we got anything down in writing, was us just going back and forth and discussing certain things.
Yeah.
And some things that either of us said that I don't think I even made a note of, but I kind of just, the whole amalgamation of everything we discussed in the end kind of did just come together.
Yeah. And you kind of hope that the better ideas will stick and the crappy ones will like fall away.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I found some notes I made on it recently, and there was some stuff that we, both of us had suggested that I don't think we're going to include, but I was kind of like, I didn't even really remember them. I was like, oh, right. But yeah, we took a while to get the cover done as well.
Yeah, I think because you sort of, it's with like when you're writing a book or something, it's just you initially anyway. You just sort of sit down and start writing. With comics, like there's a team of people, and like artists in particular are so in demand for a good artist. Everyone's a writer, and like there isn't many people who are actually good artists. So all the writers want those artists.
Yeah.
And I think we did a good job getting Will and Dan, especially Will, to do the cover, because he ended up getting like his first Marvel job like a week later or something.
Yeah.
And now he's like illustrating. People should go check out. He's doing the interior work for the Great Lakes Avengers, which is pretty amazing. It's really funny.
Yeah.
And now he's getting like variant cover work, and he's now pretty much a full fledged Marvel artist.
Well, he did a Deadpool variant cover, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he did a couple of Deadpool covers.
Yeah, he did a couple of Deadpool covers, and they were both really good as well. I can actually see his style working really well for Deadpool. It reminds me
of.
It's not. I mean, it's a little bit sillier than. I'm thinking of Ed McGuinness. When I first started reading Deadpool when I was a kid, it was Ed McGuinness and Joe Kelly, and his artwork reminds me of that sort of cartoony feel.
I know what you mean. Cartoony feel, but like a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
A little bit sort of like really. Yeah. That's good.
Suits it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously with Dan, obviously we waited a little while to make sure he was free because he's busy with loads of stuff. Vanguard. Yeah. But yeah, we 5 pages coming together with him.
Yeah. And then also Skip's got his Jericho project coming on. So next year, we should be in a much better position to actually get some comics out there.
Yeah. I know. I'm excited. Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be going to plenty of Comic Cons as well with these.
Yeah, I want to. Yeah,
because I think when we went to Lincoln, there was a lot of interest in El Marvo just from us having the cover there. I think how much better it would have been if we actually had the comic finished.
Yeah, I think the cover is a good selling point, and I think when we do the Kickstarter campaign, I think it's going to be. I think the cover is going to lure people in.
Yeah. We'll make the most of it then, man. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Well, going back to comic stuff, something I've learned, how awesome building a comic world characters can be. Well, co-writing them. Yeah, with somebody else, because I think when you put together a comic book world, or any sort of world on your own, you can kind of like just go down the rabbit hole a bit and not really have any sort of outside interference. But when you're doing it with somebody else,
yeah,
some of those suggestions are like pretty wild. Like some of the stuff with Elmarvo, which you were suggesting about. So basically just how awesome bouncing off somebody else, creating stuff like with characters and all the little quirks they've got and character names and all the little quirks of this world.
Yeah.
It's quite fun bouncing off somebody else and sort of coming up with stuff, because you think of stuff that I would never in a million years think of. And as soon as you say it, I'm a bit like, oh, well, no, yeah, that probably would work really well.
I think one of the things you probably realize about me is I like to come up with a million ideas and throw away like 90% of them. Because I just think it's a good way to sort of find the more like obscure ideas that sort of, and I'm really sort of happy with the world of Muck. Like, even though it's like we're still sort of sketching it out and like getting it there, I feel like it's got a lot of potential.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking recently that we could write so many stories in Muck with so many different characters, and we could take it in so many different crazy directions.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much our version of Judge Dredd's like Cursed Earth world. Like, you know, the world of Judge Dredd, because they've got so many different stories and characters within that universe that all over that planet. We've got the same sort of thing with Muck. You've got an aesthetic, an idea, and then from there you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we could probably put in as many things as we can think of, and it probably would work, because we've set it in a place which is hopefully crazy enough that anything will work, I think. I like it.
So another note I've got here is I've learned that... which one am I going for? Okay, so I've learned that the more... This is going to sound like painfully obvious, but the more you write, the better you get. And like, the only reason I say that is because... So I just put a blog post together, which is like a... It's sort of this, but in like, for like me as a person. And I've pretty much gone into the habit of doing it every year. I've done it 3 years in a row. And I was reading the one I did 2 years ago. And like, just the quality of the writing itself is just no way near as confident as what I would write nowadays. And it just sort of made it painfully obvious, painfully clear that just write more, because you do get better.
How much of your previous thing did you read? Did you read loads of it? Or?
Well, it didn't take me very long. And that's one thing. Like,
oh, okay.
It's like one thing I've got better at, I think, is just taking the time to sort of explain things and play with language a little bit more, which I quite like to do. Which back then I just didn't. I think that the post from 2 years ago just lacks any sort of confidence in words and in language.
Yeah.
What else have we got here? So, oh yeah, I get complimented sometimes on Hawk and Cleaver's branding. I don't really like to use that word, but I was like, it's not really. I don't really do much of that kind of stuff. I've had a few people say, It's a great brand. It's like it's very fun, and it's very unique. And I kind of think, well, that's just mainly down to you, Ben, and Dan, who does all the website stuff now. So, I mean, what do you think it is that we do?
Do you mean like the visual stuff, really?
I think so. Yeah, I think maybe like the tone of stuff we do. I think.
Yeah.
Communicated through the visual stuff.
Yeah. I like the voice we've got. I think a lot of that comes from you, but then sometimes I might try and emulate it a little bit, you know, just to make things a little bit more fun. But in terms of visual stuff, I think we've got it down now. I think there could definitely be improvements, and there probably will be, but everything just kind of like jump out at you, and a lot of stuff we do.
Yeah, I think it helps that we've got, like, you've got graphic design background, and I think it helps that we are... I mean, it sounds mean to say, but we're young, we are internet, we are digital people. Like,
savvy.
Digitally savvy. Like, in terms of like design software, we've all been using it since we were quite young. And I think the next generation is going to be even more savvy.
Yeah, we all have a little dabble, which is nice.
Yeah.
It's nice that we can all sort of like put our stamp on it. And I think the brand and the voice does sort of represent us as a group, I think.
Yeah.
It sort of captures the nature of us quite well, which makes it quite personal.
Yeah, I think maybe that's it. Maybe it's just that people, when they say the branding's good, they simply mean it feels personal rather than like they're talking to a brand, or it doesn't feel like, I don't know what I'm saying. It doesn't feel like a business. It feels more like you're talking to a person.
Yeah. I think that's right. And I think that's right when we get the feedback from people as well. They're always quite positive of everything. And then we're taking time to reply to absolutely everybody and sort of get into conversations with people and always ask for their feedback in terms of what they want to see and hear as well. And that's obviously why we've been doing the competitions with the theme.
Yeah.
With the theme votes for the last couple of months. Which is quite cool.
Yeah.
There's lots of people can get involved in that.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely want to do more of that. I don't know how we can do more, but it's... Oh, yeah. Oh, the beer's starting to work now. Okay. So, another thing I've noted is, like, how... I really wanted to do more YouTube stuff this year, but it's so difficult. So, like... Yeah. I think the thing I've learned is you only have so much time, you only have so many resources, and YouTube video content does take a considerable amount of time.
Oh, yeah. I think balancing that with absolutely everything else is kind of impossible.
Yeah, some things did have to give.
Yeah, but I think we've still kept up with YouTube. Obviously, the podcasts go on pretty much every week onto YouTube, so we've constantly got content updating on there. But any other little bits and bobs, I think we could probably add. Like, obviously, I think I wanted to do more content with, like, talking to camera, or, like, obviously, I know I did the El Marvo announcement video, but I kind of wanted to do a few more of those, but I don't know, I just didn't feel... like I had enough to say at that particular time about everything. Oh. But also, obviously, did that Hawk and Cleaver plays as well. I want to do a couple of them because, like, the gaming playthroughs, because I think they sort of make them relevant to story as well. But
yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of effort as well.
And like the vlogs, I'd like to do more vlogs, but again, it's just a lot of effort. And I think maybe if we do get to the point where we can do this full time, we'd have the time to do some of this extra stuff, but right now it's not. I mean, it's like I'd like to be able to do it, but it's not like a necessity.
No, I agree. We're doing plenty there. We've got fingers in many pies.
Yeah.
What's your favorite kind of pie?
Meat and potato.
Oh, yeah, that's a good choice.
Yeah.
You ever been to a pie minister?
There is one in Manchester. I've not been to it though. I think they were giving out free pies the other day as well.
What?
Yeah, it was like a promo.
Sounds wonderful.
There's a place down near where I work that does really great pies.
Oh, do you know what? I watched the... Sorry, I'm just a complete change of the subject here. I watched the Oasis documentary the other day. Supersonic. Heard of it?
I have.
Do you know what? It was all right. Considering Oasis are a band I actively dislike. It was weird watching a documentary about an artist that I didn't like. I don't think I've ever done that before. I decided to sit down and watch it.
What did you think of the documentary? Has it changed your mind at all?
Oh, no, definitely hasn't changed my mind.
Thing is, I really enjoy listening or, like, reading stuff that Noel has said.
I
think he's an incredibly funny person.
Yeah. Noel's a lovely guy. I think he's a great person. I think he's a good songwriter, not half as good as perhaps he's made out to be all the time.
Yeah.
He's made out to be some sort of genius, starter of a movement, you know. I don't know why we're discussing Oasis in such great detail, but I think Oasis kind of like captured the attitude of a certain generation of people, obviously in the 90s, but I don't always think they had the music to back it up, and that might just be me being a silly sod, but I don't know. I think there were some... all right songs, but I always felt lyrically and musically it was
a bit plain.
Ever so plain.
Yeah.
And I kind of like don't understand. I mean, I can kind of understand the sort of like swagger and the attitude and everything that comes with it. But for me, at least, it just doesn't feel very genuine. Like, I think I find most of the musical artists that I like the most are quite modest with their sort of attitude towards stuff. And it's the big brash characters who say, like, I'm the best and I do this and I do that I really don't.
Yeah,
I've never been able to latch on to.
What was that so, Noel said about Radiohead? He's talking about how, like, Radiohead can get good reviews no matter what they do, and he and Oasis never could. I think his name's something like Tom. What was his name? I forgot his name now. The singer of Radiohead, Tom York.
Tom York.
He said that Tom York could shit into a light bulb and play it like a xylophone or something, Pitchfork will give it an A or something like that. It's so funny. That's
simply because old Tom York's a genius.
He is a genius because he'd sing, he'd harmonise with it in such a way.
I personally think Radiohead are the greatest British band ever.
I would have to. I'd probably agree to a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got like, you know, Led Zeppelin and some of those old bands that are very good as well. I don't know. But in terms of sound and the way they've changed over the years, I think Radiohead do take it.
Accomplishments, experimental nature, and just absolute unbelievable songs.
Yeah.
Radiohead. There's something like spiritual about them. And it's hard to really like emulate that in a sort of some of their songs, not just lyrically, but everything that's going on. There's something quite spiritual to this. I find it easy to connect with, where, you know what I mean? Most of the time you don't enjoy music on a spiritual level. You enjoy it sort of on some levels, but on a spiritual level, I find it hard to really tap into something.
Yeah. Again, I don't want to go into, maybe we shouldn't talk about it too much more, but
what are we on about?
The last album that I've really felt that way about is the Bon Iver album. I don't think you're a Bon Iver fan of me, but I think that new album is just, I don't know, it's just like he taps into some certain part of me that's like, even though it's got like electronic sort of feel to it now, and it's like got lots of like vocoder and synths and stuff going on, it still feels incredibly personable and like incredibly honest and authentic. And I don't know, that does sound kind of pretentious, but
it's good. It's good when you connect with an album like that.
Yeah. I've listened to it so much. Unbelievable.
I couldn't quite get my head around it, but then I don't think I listened to it enough. Possibly.
It did take me like 3 or 4 goes. And I remember like the first time thinking, yeah, it's okay, but I don't quite understand it. And then eventually a couple of songs. Oh yeah, you know what it was? You know, we went to Lincoln. And then on the way home, I was feeling a little bit tired. I was like pretty ready for bed. And I just put it on, and I was just on the train going back, looking out the window, and it was just so perfect for that moment, and it just sort of, I suddenly understood it. It clicked with me.
Well, that's good. It's good when that happens. It's weird how sometimes it takes you a long time to get your head around an album and then fall in love with it. And I just think back to how many albums have I listened to once, not enjoyed it, completely forgotten about it, that could have been my favourite album.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I feel like some my favourite albums as well are the ones when I didn't like them at first, and they take a bit of discovering and like peeling away to sort of get at what it is that you like about it. Like they end up becoming my favourite albums. I remember the Dirty Projectors album. I can't remember what it's called. Do you like Dirty Projectors?
I've heard some stuff, I think, but not a seasoned fan.
Kind of obscure in a way, almost Radiohead-y in that sort of experimental sense. And I really didn't like the album at first. I thought it was just kind of like sort of stupid and sort of over the top. and then I just suddenly like, because my friend used to put it on at work all the time, and like it suddenly clicked, and now it's one of my favourite albums ever.
It's weird how it works, man. It is weird how it works, but also.
Okay, so we've learned that like music is pretty good. What else did we learn? I think we should probably bring it around to a close pretty soon. I don't want to say that because it's pointless. I'm just going from my list here. YouTube done that. I think I pretty much got everything that I wanted to talk about down.
Even though we did kind of touch on this, I just said about how collaborating just can make you more productive. Not necessarily, it doesn't always have to be collaborating directly with someone on a project. Sometimes just collaborating the way we do, like sometimes each working away at our own individual projects, but kind of like checking in on each other, doing that weekly thing where we discuss what progress we've been making and kind of egging each other on to, you know.
Yeah, although we forget to do that sometimes. We have been doing that right from the get-go, I think, like every Wednesday or so we sort of check in with each other. Yeah, because it's kind of lonely writing and we don't live next to each other. So just sort of checking in once a week is pretty.
We're pretty lucky though, because I think it's got to be the majority of writers are doing it on their own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, writers at our sort of level, I say, or people who are aspiring writers as well, like do it on their own. So we are pretty lucky to.
I would recommend everyone to do this. I mean, there's been a couple of people who sort of, when we first started this, they wanted to sort of get in on this. But
yeah,
it was kind of like, well, I don't really know you. And I don't know, like I would rather, much rather them start their own thing and just find their own people. And like, there's no reason to join onto something when you could do it yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But maybe people just wanted to join in with us because
we're cool as fuck.
They thought we're cool as fuck, and they thought, like, come on, I don't want to be friends with these guys. And we're like, hey, come sit with us.
Yeah.
This club is full.
Start your
it's
own
good,
club.
It's quite a good thing. It's quite a good thing that we didn't over-dilute it with a lot of people to start with, I think, because once we got started, we could have easily done that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, none of us really knew each other that well.
Yeah.
Obviously, you did with Skip. But the four of us didn't know
too well.
Yeah.
I've just gone too far the other way.
Too far.
I've seen
exactly.
Too much of his body parts. And again, I've seen a lot of your body parts as well, Ben.
Have you?
Tell
me when.
Doesn't matter. I'm just remembering some things from Lincoln. Okay, so we'll wrap up there. It's been a bit of a weird show. Part of it had Dan in, and then there was a bit with Dan in, then it wasn't, and then he came back in.
Is he okay, do you think?
He's traveling through the multiverse right now, I think.
That's what I think.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna watch Rogue One, and you should watch Rick and Morty because I think you'd like it.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, it's good.
I'll give it a little try. I might wait till after Christmas and have it be like a little New Year's pick me up or something like that.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so this show, the music is brought to you by Disaster Piece. It's one of our favourite composers. You should check him out. It's hosted now by Acast, which is pretty cool.
Oh.
And you should go to hawkandcleaver.com for a free book and to check out our other stuff. Follow me on Twitter at Luke of Condor with a K, and follow Ben.
Yes, follow me at Ben_Errington. Do it.
All right then. Bye.
Daddy, bye now.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.